Come back to order.
Please call the roll.
Steve Durham.
Here.
Val Flores.
Here.
Jane Goff.
Here.
Pam Masnick.
I'm here for a moment.
Marcia Neal.
Here.
Deborah Sheppel.
Here.
Angelica Schroeder.
Here. Let's please stand for the pledge. And Jill, how would you like to lead us in the pledge today?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Yes, I move.
Is second? Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
That wasn't a loud resounding aye, but I guess it'll do. Are there any items that any board member wishes to place on the agenda? No. Okay. We have a full meeting agenda today, believe me. We really have a full meeting agenda today. And everybody that's walked in here has given me some sort of piece of paper to add. So if I miss a few of them, please bear with us. We do have a very full agenda today, and we're going to work very hard to get through it as noted on the agenda, because we just need to get it all done. I would also encourage my fellow board members in the future, if you do have items to add to the agenda, please make every effort to get them to Ms. Marco before the session actually starts. That would be a great help. Moving on to the consent agenda, do I have a motion to place items on the consent agenda?
I move to place the following matters on the consent agenda. 14.03, approve the request for the reauthorization of teacher preparation programs at Colorado State University in Fort Collins, as set forth in the published agenda. 14.04, approve three initial emergency authorizations as set forth in the published agenda. 14.05, approve one renewal emergency authorization as set forth in the published agenda. 15.02, approve Denver Public Schools innovation application on behalf of Denver Discovery School as set forth in the published agenda. 15.03, approve Peyton School District's application for certification of a multi-district online school on behalf of Peyton Online Academy as set forth in the published agenda. 15.04, approve Colorado Digital BOCES application for certification of a multi-district online school on behalf of the Pikes Peak Online School as set forth in the published agenda. 15.06, approve Colorado Early College Douglas County's Early College designation request as set forth in the published agenda. 16.01, approve Laura A. Ayers, Terry Coy Lewis, and Leslie Levine to serve on the State Advisory Council for Parent Involvement in Education, effective March 15, 2015, as set forth in the published agenda. 16.02, approve the 2015 State Review Panelist as set forth in the published agenda. This is the end of the consent agenda.
Proper motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Jane, seconds. Is there any discussion? Any objection? All in favor say aye.
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 All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. I got you. I'm sure. All right. Ms. Marco, would you report to the board, please?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board, Mr. Commissioner. You have quite a number of materials in your packet, but first I will note that you have some items in front of you on the dais. These were, they include the transportation rules, a chart with the current list of waiver requests we received from districts, and other related matters that will be before you. As far as your packet, in 801, you have a copy of the February formal opinion from the AG's office and copies of all resolutions received to date. We did receive one more this morning, and I believe that is one that's on the dais in front of you. In 901, you have a copy of the rules for the administration of the Exceptional Children's Education Act in track changes, along with a clean copy for ease of reference. You have a chart of the written comments that have been received, and CDE staff comments in response, along with the copies of the actual comments themselves, the written comments. Additionally, you have a crosswalk between statute and rule. In 1001, you have a copy of the Food and Nutrition Services proposed rules in track changes, and along with a crosswalk between statute and rule. In 1002, you have a copy of the rules for accounting and reporting in track changes, along with a crosswalk between statute and rule. In 1501, you have the materials which were submitted by Montrose County RE1 in support of its application for innovation status. In 1502, you have the material submitted by Denver Public Schools in support of its application on behalf of Denver Discovery Schools for waivers from state statute and rule. In 1602, you have the proposed list of state review panelists for the 2015 year. In 1701, you have a copy of the media advisory announcing Corey Testotine as National Counselor of the Year. In 1901, you have comments concerning the transportation rules, and in front of you, you have a copy of the rules. And I apologize for the late delivery of those rules to you, but I did not get those until this morning. In 2001, you have the materials supporting the presentation, Colorado Measures of Academic Success, High School Social Studies Performance Level descriptors along with a PowerPoint. In 21, you have copies of the parental rights resolution, which has been revised through the work, I believe, of Board Member Mazanek and Jane Goff. For Thursday's agenda, you have Ignacio School District's presentation materials, you have Douglas County School District's presentation materials, and Healthy Kids Colorado Survey Summary, an update. And that's the end of my report, unless there are questions.
Any questions? Thank you for your report. All right, moving on to action items and the commissioner's report. Commissioner?
Great, thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse my voice, it has a little bit of a cold to it, but it's gone away. Although it leaves residues behind, I'm afraid. One thing to relate to the board before we get started. We've made every effort based upon your past comment to really shorten the presentations. That doesn't mean the material that you have is shortened. We've tried to provide summaries, but also you can go into great length and try to get those to you as far in advance as we possibly can to allow you time to read. So you will notice on this particular agenda our presentations will be short, to the best of our extent, allow you maximum time for talking and asking questions of us. So if that doesn't work, let us know. We'll adjust again. The first item on business today is an action item that we've labeled. It'd be school district resolution regarding standardized state-required standardized assessments. Just for the audience and those listening, just briefly, as you remember at your scheduled meeting in January the 8th, the state board had voted 4-3 to pass a motion directing myself as the Commissioner of Education to grant waivers to local school districts and boards to the performance-based portion of the CMAS assessment if that was requested by a district. In light of the state board of education's actions, I requested a formal opinion revisiting this matter from the State Attorney General's office, and that was presented at the last meeting, and you had a previous informal meeting that was also submitted earlier. Just to let you know, excuse me, as of today, We have 27 requests for waivers. They vary a little bit, but in fact, there are 27 waivers for requests for assessments. Right now, that involves approximately 141,763 students who would test about 24.11%, 24 rounded, percent of student population to which that would be impacted should a waiver request be granted. As I stated earlier at the February 10th, 2015 meeting, you all received information from the Attorney General, a copy of their February 4th formal opinion regarding this entire issue. The opinion, as you know, states in part that all the testing is clearly prohibits the State Board from granting a waiver to local boards and districts from the performance-based component of the English, language, arts, and math assessments, or any other statewide assessments required under Section 227-409. At this point, a copy of that opinion is also, along with every waiver request that we have received and updated, we've included that in your packet for your information. Again, this is presented to you for your information. At last month's board meeting, we discussed this briefly, and all action was tabled at that point. As Commissioner, and you certainly can do as you desire to do in your discussions, it would certainly be our recommendation from staff that either the board rescind this action as of January 18th or you vote the waivers down based upon the opinion of the Attorney General. And so that to which I will open up for any discussion among the board or others, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Is there any further discussion by the board as to this matter? Steve?
Excuse me. Thank you. Yes, we're on here. Thank you, Madam Chair. Somewhere I saw in here there were two items, one to rescind the action instructing you to grant those waivers. Is that what we're on now, or is that somewhere?
Rescinding the action but continuing to instruct him?
No. I thought that was what we were rescinding.
Rescind the action.
Is that separate from the action on the waivers per se? So for some reason I can't find that particular piece of paper.
You and I are having the same problem. Okay, I'm trying to find it myself. I had it right here. There were three actions. One, you could approve the waivers. One, I've got to find it, that you could rescind your January 18th, I believe the 18th action. Or the third one, or one you could deny the waivers. Okay.
The third one was a motion to grant a waiver.
Yeah, I have them mixed up in the order.
And the second is the motion to rescind.
Right.
And the first is, it's just those two actions. We either rescind the board action or we make a motion to grant the waivers.
Right. One would be, yeah, that's correct.
Any other discussion before we take any action?
I'll make a substitute motion to delay consideration of the waivers over until the April meeting.
That's a motion. Any further discussion before we...
Yeah.
Does anybody want to second that motion?
Which motion?
Steve made a motion. Okay. But before we do, I'd like to have further discussion on that from other board members. Do we want to... And repeat that, please, Steve. You want to...
Just to table it until the April meeting.
Table it until the April meeting.
May I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Why would we table it?
Why would we table it?
Well, I think, thank you, Madam Chairman. I think it continues to keep some pressure and interest in the testing issue on the system as we proceed through the second round of testing. While it is unlikely that the waivers would be granted, given in light of the Attorney General's opinion, I think the process that was started when we originally set in this process has been positive in that it has created a significant amount of discussion around this issue and hopefully has brought some pressure to bear on the vendor, and hopefully will be bringing a lot more pressure to bear on the vendor as we move forward. So I think particularly given tomorrow's group that's coming in, having these things around might be of value when Pearson comes in.
Further discussion? Angelica?
Madam Chair, excuse me. Was there a second, Steve, on your motion?
Yeah,
my wife, my apologies. And you were right. The first motion was to deny. The second was to rescind the January action and approve. The third motion that was recommended and you could choose would be just plain approve. Okay.
Yes, Angelica?
So I'm going to disagree a little bit with you, Steve. Those waivers did not actually change anything except create confusion. The resistance to the assessments has been going on since December or January. We've heard it from superintendents. We've heard it from teachers and parents, et cetera. So this didn't really add anything but confusion and concern with a request out there. The folks who I believe need to hear from us and are hearing from everyone else and have heard from us are the legislators, because they're the ones, based on this opinion, that have the authority to make the change, not us. So I disagree that this is in any way helpful to leave this out there. It just sort of suggests that we can't make up our minds, that we ignore the Attorney General, and that we want this sense of confusion out there, which I don't think is good for our districts.
Any further discussion? And let's see if anybody else has
questions.
No, go ahead.
Jane?
No,
just go ahead, because I need to hear.
Well, because I have something to say, too, but I'm deferring to the rest of the board.
I do, but I need to hear what he's got. Okay? How he responds.
Can I make my comment first?
And please.
Probably, if no one else has anything to say. Once again, I am very concerned about the atmosphere that's been become abundant in the schools. I think we have created confusion in the schools, and that is something that I always try to avoid. Many of the school districts sincerely thought they were so happy, you know, they were not going to have to give the test. Some knew that they probably would, but were using this as pressure, and that's fine. I have no problem with that. But I think there comes a point where we have to consider, and as one who would like to see the tests, like to see us address that. I don't think this particular action is the way to address it. I think we just keep up the political pressure, which we don't hardly need to do because everybody else is doing it anyway. There's a lot of political pressure, both in Colorado and in other states, about the testing and about the fact that it is such a big, overreaching area. So, and I agree with that. I would have happily voted for that motion if I thought we had any chance of it happening. But I felt even at that time that it was not going to happen. So I would add to what Angelica has to say here. I don't think this is a good thing to do for the schools. Making a political point is one thing, and I understand that. But we also have a second or a primary, actually, position that we need to support our local schools whenever we can, and creating confusion and pandemonium is not a way to create to support our local schools. So I would also disagree with the motion. I think it sends a message to our schools that we don't want to send. They've gotten involved in this whether they want to or not, and we've kind of in some cases drugged them in, and most of them every day have children sitting in their school desks that they are teaching, and they're doing their very best at all times, and I don't think they need this kind of added confusion. So that's my statement. Any other comment? Deb?
You can respond.
No, go ahead.
So thanks for your comment. My thought is that we were required to join PARC. PARC is a very intensive test as far as length and burden on the schools, on the kids, on the parents, and this suggestion that schools could apply for waivers, I think, surfaces the issue for the public. We've had a lot of interest from parents, from kids, from districts, and I think it's a very good discussion to be having in the public square. A lot of this came through the system without a lot of parental, with like hardly any parental input, and with very little parental knowledge. Suddenly now, because it's being given this year and it counts, there's a lot of interest. And so I would argue that tabling it allows districts to continue to voice their thoughts on PARC and to apply for waivers if they so choose. It allows us to continue to have discourse in the public square around this issue, and I think that was the effect of this motion. So I would suggest that we table it to allow more districts to consider the waiver.
And I agree with what you said, Deborah, about we surfaced the argument which had not been heard. I totally agree with that. I just think we reach a point at which I think everybody knows the argument now. They know where people stand on it. And I think to move forward and continue that argument is detrimental to the atmosphere in our schools. Jane?
I'm seeing this as two different issues are all wrapped up here. The public comment and the awareness raising and hopefully better understanding has been absolutely beneficial, and I join everybody in appreciating when you have public engagement, then answers are closer to coming. I think we need to continue that. Where the confusion comes is that this particular motion and the idea of waiving out of it's one part of the test. The way that motion was worded was one particular part of the test. It's already started. It's already complete in some areas. That will, in my mind, will be a moot phrase in that motion. But the idea of allowing further public engagement is critical. And I do think we've had a lot of good illuminating thinking going on in the public, and I am among all of us as well. I think that's a great benefit. I don't see why we cannot continue to encourage healthy, enriching, informed dialogue. And one of the places that needs to occur is over across the street. So at this point, I think that's where all of our focus and energy ought to be directed, is making sure that our legislators are as well informed as we can help them be in making these decisions, and we go with what we believe is best for our state in regard to whether it's PARC or not. How we approach this is a separate issue from raising awareness about the purpose of testing and the outcomes we want to see and how it lines up with what we've said as a state we want for the best education system possible. So I would vote against tabling and having this continue in this form. We've already been told it's against the law, bluntly, and I don't think that helps our communities understand or be less confused on anything. So I would say no to this particular motion, and yet I want to encourage all of us to continue engaging our folks in good conversation.
Angelica has a quick comment, and then we'll let Steve wrap
no,
it up.
No, go ahead. I'll call it.
I guess I just add one thing, that when we talked about this, a separate motion which allows parents to opt out of the assessment without harm to this district did take some of the pressure off and some of the concern that I think was directly toward kids. I think there are parents who felt that this was problematic for their children, and they were allowed to do so. I think doing that was helpful. I think having a waiver out there that's not legal is in no way helpful. They're two very different situations. Thanks.
I just wanted to make one comment about the legality issue. There are a host of legal issues implicit in the PARC itself, and so we appreciate the Attorney General's opinion, but there are a host of other issues, legal issues, involved with the PARC test itself. So I guess I think we need to continue to have very deep discussion about this assessment, about the data privacy issues, about the contract itself, about the recent lawsuit that was filed, several lawsuits in other states around PARC. So I just think there's many legal issues to address with respect to this, not just the AG's opinion.
Well, Madam Chair, would it be possible then to put this down, continue the discussion, and as you know, I have asked for a special session for the board to discuss this much further. Would it be possible then to vote on this, Steve, to just, you know?
You're asking if Steve would rescind his motion?
Rescind his motion, and we could vote on this, but continue the discussion. I think it has been a very healthy discussion, and we need to continue this discussion further.
I think I see that not as a motion to rescind, but just to continue the discussion. Is that what?
Right, I think.
And I see now that we have another voice down there that's not been heard yet. Pam?
Well, I would just say I really don't see any downside to tabling these waivers. Right now we have, 27 districts who are telling us that they want relief. We know that we have a lot of parents who want relief. I see no downside to continuing to allow districts to speak out. There may be more. Maybe we're at the end of it. I don't know. But I see no downside in allowing districts to continue to tell the State Board of Education that they do not like the PARC test.
Okay, I think we've had a pretty good discussion here. We're going to let Steve wrap up, and then we will. The motion still stands as it's read.
Correct. Yeah,
finish up here, then we'll vote.
I think having the issue on the table as long as we've had has produced, and this is a valuable document in and of itself for the legislature to take a look at. And I think what we accomplished is while there may have been plenty of discussion about the test, this gave voice to people who really were able to explain the problems with the test in a public forum, and I think has provided hopefully some impetus for reform. And frankly, it led to Dr. Flores's motion, which did allow us to get the parents at least some relief from the pressure of the districts, although it's clear not all districts have quite seen that light yet. But it was helpful. So I think having it around, having this hang around, we may come up with another idea or two that might be helpful. Plus, the Attorney General, I know, has been asked to look into the Missouri case to see if we have some potential litigation opportunities there against PARC, and if we do, then perhaps the board could be appointed in that action. So I don't think our options are closed. I think realistically the school districts know that if we were to grant these waivers, they would likely be challenged in court, and there's at least a chance we would lose. I think they know that, but there's nothing wrong with allowing them to continue to apply for waivers and to let those pend for the next month. So I'll let the motion stand.
All right, we're ready to vote. I would just say that I think this has been a valuable discussion, and I think basically we're all pretty much in the same place on the idea of PARC testing and the problems that it's created. We just have different ideas about how to deal with it. So with that, I will. Did you want to repeat your motion, Steve, for us?
Just to table this matter until the April meeting.
Okay, to table the matter of the waivers until the April meeting. Madam Chair, Ms. Markle, would you call the roll, please?
Steve Durham.
Aye.
Dr. Flores.
Dr. Flores is out of the room.
Jane Goff.
No.
Pam Masenek.
Yes.
Marcia Neal.
No.
Dr. Scheffel?
Yes.
Dr. Schroeder?
No.
Dr. Flores?
Yes.
That was, I lost track, but the motion carries. The motion carries, and let's move on.
It's tabled, 4-3.
Yeah. And we took up quite a bit of time on this again. If you're noticing your agenda, we are pretty tight today. So this was very important. I think it was a good discussion, and everybody got a chance to say what they, and I think it kind of illuminated the whole discussion for us all, no matter how we voted. So I appreciate that. But I also would respectfully request that we try to keep the rest of us in time. Commissioner, would you care to continue?
Thank you.
Or are we through with you?
No.
Are we through with you?
No. That would be nice, but I don't think that's likely at this point. Okay. You have to live with me for 2 days, okay? The second item on the agenda, and I call up 801. 801 talks about the school district education, secondary and elementary act, flexibility waiver renewal. Some time ago, as we explained at the last meeting, we did apply for a waiver. We applied for an amendment to the waiver. The waiver, in effect, in very simplistic terms, in my opinion, has allowed Colorado to get out of a lot of the burdens that the federal system places on states. Yeah, that is, the feds have their own accountability system. We have our own accountability system. The waiver has allowed us to defer to our accountability system, and instead of having districts be on one hand saying they're a failing school, and on another hand, just because of some subcategory, and on another hand, that we're telling them they're a great school. It also takes away the set asides, the notification of parents, a lot of increased paperwork on the part of a district, as well as, again, the set asides. We talked about this at the last meeting. We have continued to gain feedback that has shaped our waiver request from the public, from various superintendents. That said, it would be our hope, and certainly is your decision today, that we would approve the waiver for submission to the Department of Education. Whether they'll approve it, who knows? But yeah, it's due by the end of this March at the present time. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Owen.
Dr. Owen, go
ahead. Madam Chair, I think we can help you make up some time here. So as we talked last month about the NCLB waiver application, we are bringing forward to you this month. Colorado's current ESEA waiver is set to expire at the end of the 2014-15 school year. The deadline for submitting our request to renew is March 31st. As the commissioner stated, we have had some indication from school districts as we've gone out, had our team go out to different superintendent meetings around the state, that they have indicated that the waiver has been a benefit to them. This is being brought to you as an action item today on your agenda. So some of the proposed changes in the ESEA waiver. There is some conversation, and we've included an opportunity to have a potential pilot project around accountability included. We've also included your motion that is impacting districts and schools not being held liable for parent refusals to test on the PERC exam, flexibility in school turnaround models so that the principal replacement is not always required is another thing that we've heard from school districts that have been working through the school improvement grants. Greater flexibility for school choice, supplemental education service options. These are the set asides that the commissioner talked about earlier. And then also adjustments based on transitions to a new assessments are some of the changes that are in the documents that we provided to you. Mr. Chapman, our executive director of federal programs, is going to walk you through some of the things that how it would look with the ESEA waiver and without an ESEA waiver, and then we'll be happy to take any questions that you have.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. So in general, we're able to use our state system of accountability and support to meet the federal requirements. So we're using the biggest difference between having a waiver and not having a waiver is with the waiver, we don't have to do adequate yearly progress. We don't have to use that to annually assess school and district performance. So for the most part, we're able to use our frameworks, our school identification process, the unified improvement planning process to meet those federal requirements associated with AYP and not making AYP. In addition, because we're using our system, we have greater discretion in targeting schools and districts for the Title I school improvement funds, so we're able to get those funds where they're needed most. There is some reduction in the administrative and reporting burdens in that we're only implementing one accountability system as opposed to two. And we're able to use our plans and timelines for standards and assessment implementation and the implementation of principal and teacher evaluation. Without the waiver, if we were to return to using AYP, we would have the majority of schools and districts that receive Title I funding on improvement. Consequently, we'd be giving mixed messages to students, parents, educators about the quality of their schools. So under one system, under the state system, they might be identified as doing okay. Under adequate yearly progress, they would be identified for improvement. So we'd really be back to two sets of labels, consequences, and timelines for improvement. And we wouldn't have the ability, because we'd have so many schools and districts on improvement, we wouldn't have the ability to target the improvement funds where they're needed most. And again, we'd sort of return to having a duplicative system and duplicative administrative burdens on schools and districts. So as I said, if we were to go back to doing adequate yearly progress with those targets being at 100% partial proficiency, we would have, I think it's 113 school districts on improvement for this school year, with an additional 53 likely to go on improvement next year. For schools, this is restricted to just the schools that receive Title I funding. There are approximately 630 Title I schools in the state. We would have the majority of those identified for improvement currently, and then we'd have another 214 that would likely go on improvement for the 2015-16 school year. So what does that mean? Under adequate yearly progress, there's a timeline, so you advance in the improvement cycle over time. In 2014-2015, if we had been doing adequate yearly progress, we'd have approximately 80 districts that would be in the corrective action phase of Title I improvement for the 14-15 school year. What that means is really the state would be expected to take some sort of corrective action with those districts. Those are listed in the bullets. The one note I would make is the last, which authorizes students, basically school choice, and we already have school choice in Colorado. If we were to use that as the corrective action, we would have to do so in tandem with at least one other corrective action that's listed there. For schools, we would have around 80 or so schools, with a large number being added to that list in the school restructuring phase of adequate yearly progress, and those are the consequences tied to that status listed there. So chartering, replacing school staff, other sort of major restructuring of the school's governance. About a week or two ago, the USDE did make an announcement, which they had done it a while back, but they're granting additional flexibility to states that are administering new assessments during this school year. And this new flexibility applies whether we have a waiver or we do not have a waiver. And it's basically saying that states that are implementing new assessments can not assign school ratings and do not have to move forward with interventions for schools and districts that have been identified for improvement. So it's sort of an accountability pause for the 15-16 school year. And for that, if we want to take advantage of that flexibility, and again, it's regardless of whether we have a waiver or not, we would need to submit a request for that flexibility by the end of this month, by March 31st.
May I ask a question, Madam Chair?
Yes.
So that would mean that we wouldn't have to
put your mic down a bit.
Oh, sorry. That would mean that we wouldn't have to ask the districts to provide actually the feds we would ask a waiver not to count this year.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
That's correct. That basically accountability would take a holiday for a year.
Madam Chair, I just want to make sure that's clear. That's for federal.
Yes.
The state accountability laws, the school performance frameworks, the way that we calculate all the state is still in statute at this point, and so we would have to adhere to that.
Yes. We
do have some legislation last year that allowed the state to use prior year accreditation ratings as a starting point for this coming school year's school performance frameworks and district frameworks, but it's not exactly the same flexibility as what the feds have offered in this new proposal that they put out.
So, Madam Chair, may I continue?
And yes, but quickly.
What would be the pluses and the minuses of this waiver for the feds and
the waiver for the state if we were to take it.
So, Madam Chair?
Yes.
So, clarification.
We want to get into the state, right?
Right. We're not proposing anything with state legislation or state right now. And to clarify what Mr. Chapman says, it's not a pause, it's a hold. So, with the federal accountability piece, what that would do is we'd still have to calculate all of the AYP and work with the feds to identify what year we would have to use, whether it was the prior year with TCAP results, or if we have to go back to when we our waiver first was approved and use those dates and that information. So there's some things we'd have to work out with the federal government on that part. But today, I think you're specific to your question, Dr. Flores, what's the advantages and disadvantages of the NCLB waiver versus going back to NCLB? Is that what you're asking?
Well, the waiver is important, isn't it? I mean, to ask for the waiver. But for this specific issue, taking account another year rather than this particular year, the scores on this particular year, is that what we're talking about?
Okay, Madam Chair, I think I have a better understanding of the question. So, yes, I think from our perspective of the department, the ability with new assessments to let that process work its way out and make sure that we understand what that data means, it would make sense to not run federal accountability during the 15-16 school year. And so from our perspective, whether the waiver is approved or not approved, we think it's important to submit this additional request to pause, not pause, but hold accountability, the federal accountability for the 15-16 school year. Okay?
Thank you.
Is it a clarifying question? Or?
Yes, it is.
Madam Chair, I would just note that we're done with our presentation,
too.
Oh,
okay,
too,
so. Very good. Yep. All right. Angelica?
So I'll try to make this a question instead of a comment. If we do not apply for the waiver, does that take away our opportunity to do some pilots?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Under the NCLB waivers that have been allowed over the last few years, this amendment process to the waivers has been, I think, there's a greater desire by USDOE to grant some flexibility through that amendment process when you're under a waiver. Would they not allow us to do a pilot under NCLB? I'm not sure the answer to that question. It's possible that they would still entertain a potential waiver, but when we haven't requested flexibility and we're implementing NCLB, they have been reluctant to grant other things to states under that scenario. So I don't want to speak in absolutes, but I don't think it's likely, but it's something we could still pursue and see what they would say.
So I guess then I will make a comment, which is that in the concerns that I've heard from some of my districts when they've asked me to come in and hear what are the challenges with the testing, and we've gone a little bit deeper into the conversation, there are some districts that really want to try to demonstrate some different ways of assessing kids, some different timing, et cetera, in order to try out an accountability system that is more aligned with a competency-based education system. I've seen that in several places. And I think there are some folks that have been giving this a lot of thought and are fairly ready to come forward and say, so here's an alternative accountability system that we would like to propose in our district for next year. And I would hate to, I mean, I haven't promised them other than to say that I would certainly support our doing that. There's nothing wrong with trying to be a little bit innovative and changing this model whereby our testing system doesn't actually align with where we're trying to go with kids. So the folks are out there in Colorado ready to give some thought to using some very different models, which hopefully will tell us stuff. Thanks.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I would just say to that was one of the recommendations that came out of the 1202 committee was to look at potential pilot opportunities, and there is a possibility, I would say, of potentially some state legislation that would also help drive that. We're committed to that at the department. We've been helping school districts really look at that and have conversations about that, and I think some of you understand that New Hampshire's amendment to their waiver that allows for a pilot project just got approved, I think it was last week or early this week. And so there are, the path forward under the, from where we're currently at with annual assessments, I think is going to be defined largely by these opportunities to look at alternative systems.
Okay. So what you're saying is approving this request does not preclude Angelica's suggestion that would allow it. Is that what you're saying?
Madam Chair, yes, it's included in what we would submit as a as an opportunity to potentially run pilots, yes.
Thank you. Yep. Any more questions? Pam?
Does the current waiver include the portability of Title I funds? Actually, I have two questions. That's my first one. Sure.
Pam, I don't know if it's just me, but you can move your mic over a little bit. I'm not hearing you.
You can't hear me?
I can't hear you.
That hardly ever happens.
Madam Chair. We, as you know, we have a two-year pilot to test portability. We're, I think we're coming to you guys next month, or maybe it's in May, to sort of give you an end-of-year report on how it's gone this first year, and then it will implement it for an additional year. It's not included in, as part of our waiver request. So we're engaging that model, that model pilot, aside from the waiver.
So could we do that, though, in the school choice and innovation?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I think when we had conversations last year about the potential for the pilot project around this, we got the indication that we didn't need to submit an amendment to the waiver to do this. So they were okay with us running the pilot under the parameters that we brought to you as the board to get approved. And so they're just watching to see the results of that. And it is a conversation piece that's also happening around ESEA reauthorization. If you've been keeping up to some of the conversations and some of the amendments that have been put forth with some of the different bills, that's a key piece of some of the bills. And there's been some pros and cons against that have been playing out with Congress.
Right. Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
We've been supportive of the pilot, and this is the first year. We'll have the second year. But, you know, we want to talk with facts, and we want to show what the facts are, what inherent costs are in such a design, if we can apply that statewide. I think we have the authority to do that. But the question is, we've embarked on this pilot to get all the figures and then bring that back to you first, after the first year, and second, if it's successful, then if there's any appropriation for additional equipment, we'd have to put that in there. Other than that, that's where we're going with this. Because we've interpreted as we have the authority to do it. It's just a question of the systems to be able to handle it on a statewide basis.
Thank you. Jane?
Yeah, I'm going to go to the logistics of the whole thing. With the ever optimistic attitude and outlook that ESEA will actually have something happen to it, how does that line up with the timing? We have this newest application is due at the end of this month. When is notification expected?
Yeah.
Yes.
Fall.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
The intent, I think, from USDA, and again, it depends on the volume, I think, that they get with states and the timing of when everything's submitted, but the intent was to, I think, get states approved in June or by June 1st. Okay. So pretty quick turnaround time from a federal perspective of when they have historically got back to us. I think it's aggressive. Whether they can meet that with all the states, we'll see. But I think that's at least what I've heard. Is that your understanding, Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Well?
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then
yes.
Next step. Suppose something does happen in this Congress. And, you know, even looking ahead toward some time during the next school year, this is a very basic question. What happens with this waiver should there possibly be a whole different looking picture around the new ESEA?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
As soon as ESEA is reauthorized and signed, all of the waivers go away, in the sense that the new law is what will preside. Whether they have a bill to transition states from current waivers to the new law, that's something that I think would be under consideration if they have a timing of it and how they would do it. whether they would do it mid-year. If ESEA is reauthorized, for example, by December of 2015, would they allow a transition out of the current school year for states under waivers? I think they'll work all those details out, but the new law would really be what drives states going forward.
Well, you sound pretty optimistic. I'm just thinking that if mid-year, let's say it did happen in mid-year, what would that do to our accountability system? I would assume we'd still continue operating under whatever we had in place for the time we had told districts.
Sure.
Told or not.
Yes.
Madam Chair, and I'm not trying to sound optimistic, so if I'm sounding optimistic, I'm sorry.
I was
that's
kind
not.
Of kidding.
Okay. Because I'm not sure. We've been down this road several times with reauthorization, and it seems like it gets legs and then stalls out. So I've had a running debate with Ken DeLay about this, that I'm not sure exactly when, from CASB, when it's going to happen. But if it's going to happen, I think the likelihood of it happening by the end of this year is probably best. If not, I think it will take another administration to reauthorize ESEA. I don't think it'll happen under this current administration. So the state requirements are still in place, and largely we're using state accountability under the NCLB waiver. So that still continues on. Whether we get reauthorized, whether we're under NCLB waiver, we go back under NCLB, then we'll be running both systems, the state system and the NCLB system.
Okay. Thank you. Yep. Anyone else? Deb?
Yeah, I think this is such an important issue that I worry that we only had 30 minutes to talk about it, but I have a list of questions. Shall I give them all right now, or is that all right?
Well, we're all right. We've got 5 minutes to spare here. That's pretty good for us.
The NCLB waiver only applies to Title I schools. Is that right?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Title I schools and Title I districts.
Right. Okay. And so it strikes me that reading through this report, though it was very difficult to get a succinct statement in this lengthy report as to exactly what the waiver requests, exactly the strings attached and money attached, how long it lasts, and what the outcomes are. I mean, I appreciate the summary in the PowerPoint, but it still seems unclear to me having read both documents. So here's my question. It seems to me that, well, my question is, do districts have more flexibility on corrective action without the waiver? Because I think what this document seems to be saying is we need the waiver because it allows Colorado to use its model alone, and it strikes me that our model has less flexibility than if we were not to have a waiver. And I think that's been depicted in the PowerPoint as creating confusion, but then I'm back to my logic path, which is, but is our system fair? Is it right? Does this give us an implicit opportunity to look at the growth model and find out if it really works well? I've looked at some recent analytics on the growth model, and I'm thinking, I think there's problems with the growth model. So I'm wondering if we want to ask for the waiver, which says let's just have one system. It's the system Colorado put in place with input from all over from a number of entities. And it strikes me that it's creating less flexibility for districts if we apply for the waiver.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
So, Dr. Sheffel, I think the best way to try to explain that is if we go back under NCLB, you continue running the state system as is in place right now.
Right.
The only thing in addition is now you run the federal system on top of it. So if you go back under a waiver, if you go back under NCLB, you are adding some complexity to what districts have to deal with. They have to deal with the state system still, and now they have to also deal with a federal system in addition to that. And so it's both, instead of just using the state system to supplement the federal system. Does that make sense? So you have additional requirements. The state law doesn't go away. That's still in place under NCLB waiver. It's also in place under NCLB. Either way, that state system, until it's changed or modified, is what guides districts and schools from the state perspective. We've been utilizing that to also take care of the federal requirements.
Okay, and is what money is attached to the waiver from NCLB and what strings are attached? And can those be changed? In other words, how long is the contract in force? What is the authority to enforce it? And can there be changes midstream? Because I think there were in the previous waiver. I mean, it strikes me that, okay, we send this in, we sign it. It strikes me that in the last iteration there were changes to how that looked and how that was implemented after the fact. So we might vote on the waiver today thinking it's one thing, but midstream, because there's money and certain dependencies attached to it, that that can change. Can you respond to that?
Sure. Madam Chair. Yes, I'll let Mr. Chapman, I think this is a four-year renewal?
Three-year
renewal. So the time frame is 3 years for the renewal of the waiver. The ability to make amendments has always been a part of what USDOE put in place with the waiver process. And so, yes, when things, for example, state legislation changes, and we submit the waiver under the current state legislation, but it is modified, we would go back through the amendment process and say, state legislation changed, it's directing us to do this, and we would submit that waiver and then work with USDOE to get that approved. So that process has been there, and it would continue to be there throughout the 3 years that we would have the waiver.
But can the USDE make changes midstream?
My understanding, they've only added, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
That's all right.
My understanding is they've only had opportunities to grant flexibility to the existing requirements. They haven't put additional burdens on school districts after, or states after they've got waivers approved.
Am I right? May I ask another question, Madam Chair?
Pardon?
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
On page 5 of the PowerPoint, it suggests that the waiver results in requiring college and career aligned assessments, which is a park. So does that suggest that in a sense, creates the conditions to keep us coupled with PARC?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
No, it can. States can develop their own assessments as long as they meet those career-ready standards, college and career-ready standards. It doesn't have to be a specific assessment like PARC or Smarter Balanced.
Okay. And finally, can you look at the corrective action required under our system versus NCLB? That's page 9 of the PowerPoint and another list that I have. It seems like with House Bill 141182, is that right? They added the phrase with our state system that other actions of comparable or greater significance can be added to the schools on the five-year clock, right? So we have that list, turnaround school, innovation district, management contract, charter conversion, close the school, and so forth. And then this NCLB list, implementing a new curriculum, replacing district. I mean, how do you think about the schools on the five-year clock and how to deal with that? Strikes me that there's more options on the NCLB list, and if we get a waiver from it.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
So this would be in addition to the five-year clock requirements. The five-year clock requirements wouldn't go away because those are state statute. So that's in place. That's required of school districts under state statute. This would be kind of put on top of it. And that's where the complexity and some of the confusion comes into school districts. They're under a five-year clock requirement, and they have those kind of things that they're looking at as far as pathways, and then this would come on top of it and would be a part of that conversation in addition to the state requirements.
So if a school's in the fifth year, is one of the options, if we ask for the waiver or if we don't ask for the waiver, that we could ask them to implement a new curriculum?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
So we could continue, the consequences and timelines under Senate Bill 163 would continue to move forward with the five pathways essentially for schools and districts. Yes, on top of that, if the school is identified as being corrective action, that could be included on top of the consequences for the restructuring of the school that are under 163.
With the waiver or without the waiver? Either way.
That would be required without the waiver because these are only in place without the waiver.
So if we ask for the waiver, one of the options is not implement a new curriculum. A lot of double negatives here.
So, Madam Chair, I think the pathways under Senate Bill 163 leave a lot of that discretion to local school districts to make those kind of decisions. These are more intrusive. The federal requirements are more intrusive to that school level decision making in the sense of taking away some of that local authority, whereas under Senate Bill 163, there are opportunities to, for example, the pathways are somewhat limited still, but there's around charter schools, innovation schools, closing schools, the changing management of the schools. Those are all components that are currently available under the pathways of 163 to schools that exhaust their opportunities under the five-year clock.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yes, Dr. Scheffel, you're exactly right. If we did not have the waiver, it almost takes away a lot of your rights. With the waiver, you have more flexibility under the existing state system to include anything you want to, basically, within the categories we have. So it almost takes away some of your flexibility if we did not have the waiver in that particular area.
Okay, can I ask one final question? Is there a list somewhere that says, this is the money attached to this waiver, and these are the strings that the feds have attached to it. I mean, with the 5% issue last time, I guess I wasn't real clear on it. I must have read it, but it didn't surface itself to me that part of the attachment to requesting the waiver last time was that schools must show 95% participation in these assessments. What strings are attached to the money at this point? Is there a list somewhere?
Madam Chair.
Yes. Sure.
I'll let Mr. Chapman talk specifically. My understanding is that the federal funding coming in, under the waiver or without the waiver, is the same amount of money. There's no additional changes or opportunities for more money under one or the other. There could be more restrictions to the LEAs, to the school districts, under NCLB about the use of those funds, in the sense that if they're on restructuring, if they meet one of these corrective action categories under NCLB, their discretion to utilize those funds the way they want under our existing waiver, it becomes somewhat limited, because then they have to set aside a certain amount of funding for transportation, they have to set aside a certain amount of funding for school choice, they have to set aside for, professional development. It restricts what they do with their Title I funds, but they don't get more Title I funds as a result of being under a waiver with or without the waiver.
Is there a list?
You want it right now?
Are we supposed to vote on it today?
Yes.
I need a list of exactly what the strings are attached to this waiver. What are the strings?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
So the list, there would be no list. The funding that's coming into the state is the same under either scenario.
The funding, but the strings attached to asking for the waiver. Why wouldn't every state ask, or why would no states ask? I mean, what's the motivation? There has to be some motivation for the waiver besides right. just altruism, right? I mean,
yes.
Madam Chair, we can go through again. The corrective actions that are under page 9 and I think for schools and for districts, that's a lot of the set-asides and the restrictions under duplicate messages that are being sent to schools and communities around going back under NCLB. That's the motivation for a lot of states submitting waivers to USDOE, is they really want to run their state system of accountability. And so if they don't have a waiver, they have to run whatever state system they have and the federal system. And so that's why I think there's over 40 states, close to 40 states that have NCLB waivers in place, and that's why out of all the states, that's the reasons why they're submitting these. The corrective actions, the list of corrective actions, we could certainly get you that are required under NCLB for schools and districts. That shouldn't be too difficult to pull up and produce.
Okay.
Well, maybe another board member could comment. I just have a hard time believing that the feds, out of the goodness of their heart, would allow the states to apply for waivers so that they could have more states' rights. I mean, I have a hard time believing that.
Okay. Keith, did you have a comment?
I had a couple of questions. One is, if this application is considered modified, let's say it's granted in some form, does it come back to the board for approval or acceptance of the waiver, or are we done at that point as a board?
The motions have to do with approving the flexibility waiver.
Madam Chair?
Or not approving, yes.
I think I understand Mr. Durham's question. If as submitted, there's required changes by USDOE to get it approved that are different than what's being submitted today, does that come back to the state board then for their approval before USDOE signs off on it
yes.
as well? Is there another step if there's changes to it?
But we would have access to approve or disapprove of that action.
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct.
Yeah, so if there are changes, then we could say yes or no and reject the waiver at that point in time.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
And then secondly, on page 15 of the waiver, let me just read the quote here. Colorado's academic standards in all content areas have been revised from top to bottom and brought in complete alignment with those in Common Core. I have heard a number of times in my short service here that we have Colorado standards, that they're really Colorado developed standards. A lot of those comments and this statement cannot both be true. I happen to personally believe this statement's true. So So I'll make my truth in labeling point one more time that we really shouldn't refer to Colorado standards because we don't have Colorado standards, and the waiver makes that quite clear. If I could proceed on page...
Did you want to comment on the first question before you go on?
Well, if they want to discuss it, let's discuss it.
Dr. Owen?
The only clarification, Madam Chair, that I'd have to that is for language arts and math, that should be appropriate. But for the rest of the standards, those are absolutely developed by Colorado. So, okay. And Jill can talk to this in more depth if you have more questions on it. But
all right. Yep. Thank you. Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you. Then this is one that I just couldn't make jive on page 67. You have 5 accreditation designations, and then you have a chart on page 68 that has, unless I can, my counting is getting bad, only has 4 designations. And did I miss something, or is there something awry there?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, once for school districts, there are 5 ratings for school districts. There's 4 ratings for schools.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Is there a motion? Angelica?
I move to approve the Colorado Elementary and Secondary Education Act Flexibility Waiver Renewal Request as submitted by staff.
Is there a second?
I second it.
Val, seconded by Val. Any discussion? Any disagreement?
Call the roll.
Okay, then call the roll, please.
Steve Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Flores.
Aye.
Jane Paul.
Aye.
Ann Magley.
Aye.
Marsha Neal.
Aye.
Dr. Sheffield.
No.
Dr. Schroeder.
Aye.
Thank you. Motion carries 6-1.